to order the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. Welcome. We have a crowded room. We have a crowded agenda. When we set these, we don't know what the level of public interest will be necessarily, but I believe there's a pretty high degree of interest in both of the bills that we're planning to hear today. We're planning to spend an hour on each, which may mean that we have to carry over some of the public testimony. It definitely means that we will be using the timer to try to limit testimony, so I'll ask folks to be brief as they come up to share their comments. So we're going to start with a public hearing on House Bill 3535. I'll open that, and I'm going to invite a panel to introduce the bill to us. Jana Gastelum, Sean Penrith, and Tom Kelly, could you please tell us about the bill? Yeah. So I'm going to ask you to try to keep your comments to about 2-3 minutes each so we can hear from as many of the folks who've come, some of them from long distances, to testify on this and the other bill.
Chair Cannon, Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, my name is Jana Gastelum. I'm the Program Director for Global Warming at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify for you today. We all know that Oregon is hurting. Our unemployment rates are high, especially in the construction sector. Many households struggle and have to watch every dollar. The breakdown of the real estate market has eroded confidence in that sector and thrown our whole economy off course. Fortunately, there are ways to put people back to work, bring more transparency into the real estate transactions, which will help rebuild confidence and assist consumers and businesses to better manage their energy costs and save money. That's why I'm here today to support HB 3535. You have an amended version of the bill in front of you, which I will concentrate my testimony on today. The amended bill removes two provisions found in the original bill, the Energy Efficiency Prioritization Standard and the Property Tax Abatement for High-Performance Buildings. While we and the bill's many endorsers believe these provisions would have multiple economic and environmental benefits, we've decided to focus the bill on energy performance scores and energy benchmarking in the residential and commercial sectors.
And Jan, can I just confirm, this is what we've received at the dais. It's not an official LC amendment, but it is amendments that you are proposing we make to the bill. Has this been made available to the public as well?
I sent it into the committee.
Okay. Do we have copies available for those who wish to
review
them?
We don't.
Okay, so we'll make sure those are available, since that may be what others want to comment on, or are your proposed amendments.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thank you. Within the amendment process, we've also been in conversation with many groups about cost-effective strategies and information supply for people to help reduce their energy use. These include nurseries who can provide shade trees, eco-roofs that help reduce energy loads, and others who have great information to share. And we appreciate the partnerships that have developed around this bill. Included as an attachment in my testimony is a list of more than 100 businesses and organizations throughout Oregon who have supported HB 3535 and this provision. These endorsers include large commercial developers and operators like Skanska, residential design build firms, home builders and realtors, Oregon-based manufacturers, business alliances, building trades, the FL-CIO and other labor organizations, cities, faith and environmental groups, and numerous others who believe that this legislation can and should help put Oregon back on its feet. You should have also received a letter of support from the E2 Business Network, a member of the Corvallis City Council, and in addition, attached to my testimony are letters from McKinstry, Greeting Edlin, and two realtors. And I wanted to take a minute and read from the realtor statements. This is from Shannon Spence, an Oregon realtor of 17 years. She says, "I believe an EPS will help realtors match their clients with a home that is right for them. An EPS can help homeowners budget their housing expenses so they can continue to live in their homes without the threat of unforeseen energy costs putting too much pressure on family income." Similarly, Robin Denberg, another realtor, states in his letter, "Imagine how helpful it will be to be handed a blueprint for cost-effective improvements right up front. These improvements don't just save money, they improve the comfort and livability of a home. That's information I'd love to be able to share." Right now, consumers...
You could wrap up your testimony.
Sure.
Please.
Right now, we don't have access to consistent information, which you'll hear more about later on. I also just wanted to note that we've also been in conversation with a commercial building sector who spend $1.2 billion on electricity bills every year. We're working on best management practices, use of the Energy Star portfolio manager to track energy use in the building sector, in the commercial building sector. It's a 100% free rating tool available online. Finally, I just want to conclude with the fact that energy efficiency is a cost-effective job creator. You'll hear from others today who are struggling in their sectors and would appreciate the help that this bill would supply. Now's the time to pull together for Oregon and help re-energize the economy. I urge you to support HB 3535.
Thank you. Who's next?
Great. Chair, committee, my name is Tom Kelly. I'm the owner of Neil Kelly Company, a remodeling and building firm located in Portland, Bend, and Eugene. We're a 130-employee company engaged not only in remodeling and home improvements, but also in home performance energy retrofits. Give you a little street cred, we developed the first LEED commercial building in Oregon, and that's our South Portland showroom, and we also built the first single-family LEED home in Oregon. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 3535. Back in the 70s, former President Jimmy Carter had it right. In response to the then serious oil shortage, he implemented tax credits that drove an industry that we then called weatherization. Our company grew a division to 7 trucks and 30 people installing insulation and storm windows. We were making our first steps to energy independence in those days. History could have been different in many ways, but the next administration threw out the incentives, and the industry that we were involved in shrank back almost to nothing. Now, over 30 years later, we are again focusing on energy efficiency. 3 years ago, we began anew what we call Neil Kelly Home Performance. In an industry that's been devastated by the Great Housing Depression, this business is the only growth part of what we do. We doubled our business volume from 2009 into 2010. In our company, we are one of the at least 50 energy retrofit companies in the Portland area. It's an industry that has sprung up. In the last year, we've created 5 jobs, and now with the emergence of the Clean Energy Works Oregon project, we actually have 6 positions we're currently recruiting for. My point is, this is about jobs. So I'm here to support this bill for a variety of reasons. I'm here because the new technology available today will help us do what we were trying to do 30 years ago a lot more effectively. I'm here because I believe this bill will revive the housing industry, both new and remodeling. I'm here because I think the owners of both commercial and residential buildings will achieve savings in the face of ever-increasing energy bills and use the savings to help revive our economy. I'm here because I think this will help Oregonians improve the value and comfort of their homes and buildings that they live and work in. I'm here because I think energy performance scores are an innovative idea whose time has come. What I know in business is that if you don't measure it, you can't improve it. And I'm also here because I deeply believe that we have a responsibility to make a difference in fighting climate change. Most importantly, I think this is maybe the best job development program we have available to us in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm perfectly timed at 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Coach Cannon, Coach Gillum, and members of the committee. My name is Sean Penrith. I'm the Executive Director of the Earth Advantage Institute. We're a nonprofit based up in Portland. I give you a perspective on energy disclosures per se for your consideration. Energy disclosure for buildings offers 5 things: transparency to consumers, markets, real estate professionals. More importantly, it acts as a guide to improve the retrofit measures undertaken to save money. It stimulates the retrofit job market, reflects the attributes of high-performance builders and buildings themselves, and provides a baseline from which we can reduce CO2 emissions. The energy performance score is the equivalent of a miles per gallon rating. It is often noted that property taxes utility bills exceed property tax levels, and yet it would be inconceivable to purchase a home without understanding the property tax disclosure. In the same way, we should be able to enable a consumer to view the energy impact of a home. The energy performance scoring allows home-to-home comparison, which is important to allow consumers to take into account the premium that's going to be affected by the energy use. In a recent report in Holland, they actually studied the economic impacts of labeling in the Netherlands and found that high-performing labeled homes achieved a premium of 6.1%. 60% of the homes that we are implementing the energy performance score in Bellingham, Washington, are going from an audit process all the way through to a retrofit process. That is unheard of in terms of the transition from an audit to a retrofit rate. It's unbelievable. The audit is around the $200 to $400 range. This is comparable to other costs that are incurred when you ready your home for market, so it's not too much out of line. The benefit from uniform and transparent energy disclosure is needed for consumers and the market. We have the market responding to energy performance scores from the insurance industry and the banking industry, the one to offer preferred products based on high-performing EPS scores. It is a true market mechanism. Earth Advantage has been involved in energy labeling since 2006. As a non-profit, we've looked at all the different systems out there. We feel like we have a very good handle on it, and we think the state could benefit by having one of these. We're operating in five or six states right now to deliver 35,000 energy performance scorecards. The Dutch report is very telling. It's the one report globally that's examined the economic impact of labeling, and it concludes, for the energy performance of the complete residential stock to improve, all homes should have an energy performance certificate. This is similar to the trans fats industry when nutritional labels were issued to food. They did not just issue nutritional labels to healthy food, it's to all foods. And it resulted in a severe decline of consumption of trans fat foods. So the point is, disclosure and energy on buildings across the board is useful. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Also right in at 3 minutes. Perfect. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Can you tell us what other states have this currently?
Yes. The states that are introducing the energy performance score include Washington, Alabama, Virginia, and Massachusetts. That's not to say that they're the only states. There are other states that are looking at energy disclosures, and they number around five additional states.
That are looking at doing it but don't currently have it in place.
Correct. Exploring the implementation.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Coacher. I know time is short, so just a brief comment to thank Mr. Kelly for his role and leadership in creating jobs and advancing our economy through energy efficiency, and thanks for all your hard work on it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much to this panel. We'll bring up Marshall Runkle, Patrick Capper, and John Mola. So an additional panel of supporters, then I know there's some folks here to testify in opposition. Because of the time limits, because we're on the clock, encourage you to submit written testimony, particularly if you feel like you weren't able to get at it in the 2 or 3 minutes that you were allowed. We do put those in our files and read them as we consider these bills. So if you've got written comments, pass them along.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Capper with the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and I'll be well under 3 minutes. Oregon nurseries are very engaged in energy efficiency. The Nursery Association is working on, with the Oregon Environmental Council on reducing carbon emissions and reducing energy use through the climate-friendly nursery project. For our own operations, reducing energy use will save money and keep nurseries competitive. As Oregon homeowners and businesses reduce their energy use, it keeps costs stable for everyone and helps the whole economy. There are many plant-based strategies for reducing energy consumption, such as installing eco-roofs and shade trees. Increasing energy efficiency in our own operations do not only save money, it also creates new market opportunities. There is demand for lower carbon nursery products. Green building practices will improve nursery products and sales and cut our costs. This will create jobs and businesses for Oregon's largest agricultural sector and promote the nursery industry. We look forward to working with OEC on the amendments that were discussed earlier, and I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Marshall Runkel. I'm a partner in Green Home by Ecotech, a small environmental services company. I took the afternoon off for crawling underneath houses and in attics, so I really appreciate the opportunity to testify. So I'm a partner in the business, founded 8 years ago, do environmental services. We've got 24 employees now. We decommissioned underground storage tank. We do radon testing and remediation. We do seismic retrofits and energy efficiency work. Our motto is do good, do it right, do well. Signing a paycheck ranks right behind marrying my wife and being there for the birth of my daughter in terms of the things that have been the best experiences of my life. And I got to tell you, I underestimated how deep that experience would be. My goal today is just to give you a quick glimpse on what energy efficiency looks like on the ground and why I think it could be a job creator or a job or help put people back to work, I think is a better way to say it. Yesterday, I spent the afternoon at a family's house in North Portland doing an energy efficiency assessment for the Clean Energy Works Oregon program. The Clean Energy Works Oregon program was made possible by the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Act that Representative Bailey authored and many of you supported. And that's made it affordable for people all over the state to make energy efficiency upgrades to houses. And I could tell you that the CEWO program is expects to create at least 1,300 family wage jobs. And those are at small HVAC companies and plumbing companies, and weatherization companies, electricians, like people that there are thousands of sitting at home and not working today. The HVAC and plumbing industries devastated by the economic downturn. Other people have said that. Unemployment rates 12% in Jackson County. I think that everybody agrees the economic downturn occurred because the real estate market overheated. And there's been some sensible reforms that have been enacted. People can no longer get a mortgage based on their stated income. People, you have got to go to an impartial appraiser now to get a rating of your house. I'd put like putting a system like this in place in that same bucket. It's just like this is a sensible reform that helps give people information about their real estate purchases and keeps will keep the real estate market from overheating in the future. And I think that's really important to say, look, this doesn't prevent people from doing anything. I drove here today in my 2001 Dodge pickup that gets lousy gas mileage. You know, it doesn't say like you can't have a house that doesn't get perfect scores. I would never take the old windows out of my house. You know, like, this doesn't enforce a certain way of being. It just gives people information about how to be.
Marshall Field.
Right.
Thanks.
I'll just close it up by saying thanks for the opportunity to testify. And I think this is an awesome job creation strategy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon. My name is John Morris. I'm a director at Fluid Market Strategies. We're an energy efficiency consulting firm located in Portland, Oregon. We started out as two employees in 2006, and today we're over 60 employees. Our key clients are Bonneville Power Administration, Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, the Energy Trust of Oregon, along with several other utilities in Oregon. We run energy efficiency programs for those said utilities, including the Northwest Energy Star Homes Program, Simple Step Smart Savings Program, and the Northwest Ductless Heat Pump Program. Fluid Market Strategies is in full support of this bill. We encourage passage. We believe that Oregonians will benefit greatly from high-performance buildings and homes. Not only will Oregonians get higher indoor air quality, more comfort from consistent heating and cooling, and better health, they will pay less for it. Additionally, we believe that an energy performance score will be a key driver for Oregonians to better understand the performance of their current and future buildings. We also believe this will be a transparent mechanism for builders to separate themselves out in the higher quality homes that they build, whether that's through an Earth Advantage home or Northwest Energy Star home or LEED. We also believe that by implementing energy efficiency technologies such as heat pump water heaters, ductless heat pumps, we can help get those energy performance scores even better. I want to echo some sentiments that were raised at the Oregon Business Alliance, stating that energy efficiency truly is a way for the state of Oregon to have a better future, and Fluid Market Strategies is living proof of that. We expect to be over 100 employees in the next year and a half on energy efficiency work alone, and other businesses like ours, such as PECI, Cadmus, as well as Ecos, are other companies in Oregon that are doing energy efficiency and experiencing growth. And by passing this bill, we can continue that growth and more jobs for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Boone.
Thank you. Can you tell me how much these assessments cost?
I would estimate between $200 to $400.
Anything else? All right. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate you being here. We'll hear next from Gwen Baldwin, I think. I apologize if I'm missing your names. Dale Johnson and Priya Lacher. Again, apologies on the names. You'll correct me, I'm sure. In any order.
Go ahead. Take it away.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cannon, Chairman Gillum, and members of the committee. My name is Gwen Baldwin, and I'm here today on behalf of Metro Multifamily Housing Association. For those of you who may not be familiar with MMHA, we are a statewide organization that represents over 150,000 units of rental housing. Everything from mom-and-pop duplex rentals to property managers and members with thousands of units. Each year we offer hundreds of educational classes and best practices seminars to our members, including our most recent maintenance fair, which helps properties operate more efficiently overall as well as in accordance with new regulations. To that point, House Bill 3535 would increase the regulatory burdens on the multifamily industry at a time when we're implementing and paying for a large number of changes that were made in the 2009 session, in addition to federal lead-based paint regulations that were just put into effect last April. So our industry is still dealing with stuff from the last session. And what House Bill 3535 would require is for multifamily property owners to pay a state certified auditor to create energy reports for each unit, before it can be rented, before it can be advertised for rent, and requires those energy reports to include estimates of energy usage for each unit to be given to prospective tenants. A tenant may walk away from their lease within 5 days of receiving that report under this current legislation language. They also would get all payments. And that does not discriminate against fees, charges, reviews, screening charges, any payment, regardless of the expense to the landlord. In addition, failure to provide a current report, I understand they're done every 10 years, would be grounds for lease termination within 60 days. That's not voluntary and that's not simple. Energy usage varies dramatically by each tenant and their personal habits. Some like a very warm housing unit, some like a very cool housing unit, some like the windows open, and they're willing to pay for that. Some keep the energy on, the lights on all the time. Some, you know, are constantly running around turning off lights from room to room. Trying to even provide an estimate it makes that very, very difficult. And something that would be required at signing of lease, which the legislation proposes, will not provide any more informational benefit than something that tenants who are interested can already do, which is contact the utility to review past bills. It will also have a negative impact on affordable housing. By increasing costs to those providing it, in turn, that puts pressure on the costs of those units, which increases the cost to tenants. While our industry, no question, responds better to carrots than sticks, and I understand that there may be a removal of the property tax provisions from this legislation, The legislation, however, doesn't provide any realistic way of financing those energy improvements. For example, most affordable units are often the oldest and least energy efficient, yet those same units have unique challenges to retrofit, both from a design and financing point of view, and few owners have the ability to self-finance. So, in summary...
Well done.
I heard that ding. even if property taxes were financed at a later time, there's no way to get there at the start. So for those reasons, the multifamily housing industry opposes 3535.
Thank you for your testimony. Move to you.
All right. I haven't done this before. I'm a little nervous. My name's Kriya. I'm the realtor that started Greeting MLS Systems. That's multiple listing systems that all realtors use. My background is in architecture. I have looked at all of the inputs for the EPS score and compared it to what we have on the MLS system. I know that there are more than one multiple listing systems here in Oregon, but the difference between what the inputs are for the EPS and the MLS system is basically boils down to how leaky is your building, that's insulation and ceiling, and how many CFLs you have. I don't really think that this should be legislated. I think people should be given the choice of having an EPS score or not, and I think it's wonderful that people are choosing to do that, but I don't think it should be mandated. I think it's costly. I know other MLS systems are going to continue greening their systems. And one other point I wanted to make, the energy that you use in a house, for the most part, those appliances are performance tested and labeled by Department of Energy anyway. So I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
You're doing great.
What I have included with your package is a copy of the MLS system that we use, and I've also incorporated a little bit of look that I've had with the EPS score versus the MLS and some other observations that I've had. I do think it would be quite costly to label every single home in the United States. I do think it's a good idea to get greened, but I think it should be voluntary. Oh, one other thing I have to say. I know that from my own experience as a realtor that a lot of people want to green their homes as they buy them. A $500 or $400, whatever we're going to price the EPS score at, sometimes will not allow me to green my transaction even a little bit. Sometimes I'm able to negotiate in an Energy Star appliance or something like that. I almost always plant trees, but that... when there's tiny little wiggle room in your negotiations, I would prefer to be able to have the choice to negotiate something that actually greens that house. That's something that I think is really important. Sorry, I'm really nervous. I think that was the other thing. Oh, and if we had my MLS only, if we had had the EPS score last year, it would have cost $13.9 million and not one watt of energy would have been saved with that expenditure. I really think we need to be considerate, and that's all I have to say.
Yeah, I have to ask you to do one more thing, which is to state your full name for the record.
Did I not
I'm not sure we got the full name at the start. So.
Okay, I'm sorry. I haven't done this before. My name is Kriya Locker.
Thank you.
Now I need you to repeat the testimony.
Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Dale Johnson, and I appreciate the chance to speak to you folks on this hearing. I'm here to speak in opposition, not because I don't believe in more efficient energy. You've heard testimony from people that industry's been working on making our lives more energy efficient for three decades now, and they've been doing a good job. You've heard a number of testimonies of people that have very successfully been working at that. I really see no reason for the state of Oregon to get involved in this. Government is gradually taking over every aspect of our lives. And the question we must ask ourselves is this something that the state of Oregon should be doing? And I would submit the clear answer to that's no. We need to significantly reduce the cost of running the state, and this is a big move in the wrong direction to increase that cost. History has proven that it's not possible to write enough laws to protect everyone from cradle to the grave. We need to do some thinking ourselves. Buyers need to take some responsibility for themselves. This kind of goes along with the earlier testimony here. If the buyer wants an energy audit, the buyer or the seller or some negotiated difference between you should pay for it. Often property is sold on an as-is basis. I've sold one under that condition myself because the buyer was going to do something completely different with it. Everything got changed. There's just no reason to do an energy audit in this case. This bill is not a wise use of our tax dollars. I would urge you to consider the total cost of enacting this bill, the cost of developing an energy performance rating system, the mandated cost to landlords and sellers to provide energy performance data for buildings in which many cases might have not even be necessary, the cost of utility companies for filling out government forms and paperwork and the frustration that goes along with that, the cost of needlessly sending energy consumption data on commercial buildings to the EPA, the cost of monitoring and policing the requirements of this bill, the cost of tracking exemptions for buildings and improvements that meet specified criteria. Most of this cost goes to the state, but a lot of it goes to the industry, and it doesn't do anything. So if the industry is doing the job well, let's get out of their way and let them do it. Energy efficiency can be accomplished more efficiently through education and cost-benefit without setting up a bureaucratic process. I would submit that mandating energy efficiency is not the role of the state government, so I would request that you turn this bill down.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for this panel? All right, seeing none, thank you all for your testimony. I'll bring up the next group. It will include Jeff Catlin, John Molis, and Rory Jackson. Now we heard from John. Go ahead, we'll bring John in when he gets here. Go ahead.
Co-chairs and member of the committee, my name is Jeff Catlin. I live in Portland. In 2009, I started an energy auditor training company for which I am now the Director of Education Services. My company, the Energy Conservation Training Company, has been working collaboratively with Mount Hood Community College and WorkSource. We have trained and certified over 100 energy auditors so far. Good, hardworking citizens. People who were caught completely off guard by this economic crisis. Many of our graduates have found jobs, but not nearly enough. With radiation leaking into the Pacific and the BP oil spill fresh in our minds, I'm hoping we can come together and tackle this issue, the number one threat to our prosperity today. That is our dependence on dangerous, unpredictable, and unsustainable energy sources. Can we put our differences aside and agree? Now is the time to build a clean energy future, a foundation on energy efficiency and renewable energy sources. Oregon has trained energy auditors who are working throughout the state, but they don't have enough work. There are so many highly skilled and well-trained experienced folks who are eagerly awaiting to build a clean energy economy that we so desperately need to create. We are willing and able to roll out the program statewide. With an energy performance score, the process of measuring energy efficiency of a home is now standardized, reliable, and cost-effective. The process looks at the home itself, not at the behavior of the residents, so that a new owner gets valuable information. Without an audit or an approach like EPS, data to compare between homes is simply not available. Instead of having multiple mixed measures, Having an accepted approach throughout Oregon is good for everyone. You know that you are really, you would know that you are really making comparisons. It is clear for realtors, buyers, and builders, and it will ultimately result in useful consumer information that is expected when one makes the most important purchase of their life, buying a home. Having a standardized mile per gallon style label, like the energy performance score, for every Oregon home is a vital step in building a secure energy future and a stable economy for our state. HB 3535 will put Oregonians to work. It'll save Oregonians money. It'll make our lifestyles more sustainable. Promoting energy efficiency is the most practical and cost-effective thing that we can do. As a veteran and the son of a former POW and the uncle of a niece who's in combat training for Afghanistan right now, I'm here to make a personal plea that we build this new energy economy based on sustainability and put our petty interests aside. I'm in this industry not just to make money as a business. I'm in this industry because I see the war that we're fighting is the war to build a clean energy future. And it is the most important thing that we could do right now because everything is hinging on it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Hello, Chairman and Representatives. My name is Rory Jackson, and I graduated out of one of the classes that Jeff taught, and I was funded through WorkSource and was able to go ahead and get the education and the benefits that I needed to go ahead and find out more about this. I've been in the construction business for 15 years. Obviously, because of the way the business and the economy is going right now, things aren't going so well. It's hard for anybody in that business and stuff to find work. I'm finding it hard right now for myself, even though I have my credentials and I've graduated and I have my certifications. I'm still bumping my head up against the doors out there and stuff right now that everybody else is and stuff, that there's actually no jobs. I support this bill because I believe strongly that we will go ahead and be creating jobs for the people that we are funding through WorkSource, through funds that you've already made available to help educate the people to go ahead and get those funds out there and help us be able to become more employable. I think what we're doing is making, when we're doing in the houses and stuff for the people and stuff by doing this bill, is that we are giving them comfort, we're giving them safety and health, and we're going ahead and giving them a lifestyle that will be much better in their homes. We talk about the different parts and the different things and stuff, but scientifically, we can go ahead and do this. We have the technology to go ahead and go into the house, show them the improvements that we can do to it, make the house more comfortable for them, and make it a better place. I see it as a win-win for everybody, for their real estates, for the people that are making the investments in the houses, the people that are renting and stuff. I would be more inclined to go ahead and rent or buy a house if I had some type of sticker, just like you have on a car, that I can look at that gives me some type of a base idea where I can go ahead and find the information or be more informed about my decision, just like Jeff said, that you're going to be making for probably the rest of your life or the biggest investment in your life. And so I strongly support Senate Bill 3535. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions? Great. We'll bring up the next panel. Appreciate you being here. We'll bring up, we'll go with Paul Marish, Barbara Trout, and, sorry, we have a lot of sheets here, Fred Yates.
Thank you. Chairs Cannon and Gilliam and committee members. My name is Barbara Trout. I'm on the board of directors of the Tillamook PUD. And I'm here on behalf of the Oregon PUD Association, whose members include five people's utility districts providing electric service in Oregon. Oregon's electric PUDs collectively serve over 175,000 customers. We deliver over 4 million megawatt hours of electricity to Oregonians annually. We are each governed by five elected board members who hold open meetings, establish policies, and set cost-based rates for the services we provide. Today we're testifying in opposition to the energy efficiency planning mandates in HB 3535. Oregon PUDs have always been advocates for energy efficiency. To date, we've provided over $46 million for energy efficiency and conservation projects to our consumers, resulting in an energy savings of over 5 million kilowatt hours. On top of this, Oregon's consumer-owned utilities have committed to achieving 504 average megawatts of additional energy efficiency savings from 2010 through 14 through the Northwest Power Plan. PUDs plan for and prioritize energy efficiency spending through our locally elected boards, through a partnership with Bonneville Power and under the Northwest Power Plan. Mandates in HB 3535 go against public power, which believe adamantly in the local control of our elected leaders. Some examples of energy efficiency programs offered by PUDs to their customers include free comprehensive home energy audits, rebates and low-interest financing for weatherization and window replacement, energy-efficient heat pumps and duct sealing and ENERGY STAR-qualified appliances in manufactured homes, rebates for free hauling away and recycling of inefficient refrigerators and freezers. Additionally, PUDs have provided over $1 million in incentives to K-12 public schools with more projects underway. We do not need additional mandates, which we feel will increase costs without a realized savings to our customers and will fly in the face of our founding principle, which is local control. This legislation has been described as a jobs bill, yet if it passes, it is likely to result in less revenue for jobs in our local communities by increasing administrative costs, and that's without achieving the goals it sets out, which are to achieve increasing energy efficiency spending. OPUDA member utilities provide 380 family wage jobs in our rural communities, representing more than $43.5 million in salary and benefits, much of which stays in our local communities. We're urging you a no vote on this bill. Unfortunately, we were not provided with the details of the amendments until the hearing, so we're not able to fully state the extent to which this will affect all of our PUDs.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, and y'all are doing a great job keeping testimony brief. I appreciate it. We're moving quickly. That's the way it sometimes is. Who's next?
My name is Paul Marresh. In August, I will have been a licensed real estate broker in the state of Oregon for 20 years. The predominant amount of my work is with entry-level home buyers. I do some commercial work, and I do work with some investors and some move-up buyers, but mainly what I've done for just about 20 years now is first-time home buyers, and I'm here to speak against this bill. I believe strongly in a lot of the principles behind this, and I agree a lot with what Mr. Kelly said earlier. But there's already energy audits that are available through there's a 3% fee on your utility bills. Now, those audits can't be used in a real estate transaction. Van Jones's book, The Green Collar Economy, I like there's a quote in there by him, the most effective tool in greening America is a caulking gun. There are resources available for people to get a free energy audit. It's not actually free because they've already paid for it. And they can audit their house and then figure out, you know, I can afford $2.49 a caulk this month. I deal with people that are household incomes of $35,000 or less. And when you talk about it's only $200 or $400, well, the $200 home inspection is now up to $500. All these costs somehow or other end up being borne by the buyer. But there's some problems here. Home sellers say, I have to get this money back. And it doesn't matter how much money they put into the house. What matters is what people can afford to buy. Home buyers have to now qualify for the loan. The mortgage broker doesn't white out their income and say, you can buy this house. They have to actually qualify. And any little thing with the people I deal with, a 0.5% difference in interest rates, another $500 that they have to come up with closing costs means they don't get to buy a house. It means a family of four living on $35,000 a year doesn't get that $1,500, maybe $2,000 worth of tax breaks that those of us who own a home have in that same income bracket. The standards, it's pretty vague, and from what I and people that I know have looked at, there's not like empirical standards about how this is going to be determined, this score, what the score is of the house. People have already testified it all depends on how the person lives in the house.
If you could wrap up your testimony, please.
That was a problem. Because, see, today I had my ethics class. You know, every few years I have to take another class in ethics. I'm not allowed to work outside of my area of expertise, and that's to protect the public. So I'm not supposed to be making representations that I don't know the veracity thereof. Now, people are going to get an energy score that nobody has a clear, objective definition of what it is and what it means. But people are going to think that they can rely on this. Now, who's going to be, can they come back to the homeowner and sue them 2 years later because they couldn't achieve that bill that that other person had for their utilities? Another thing is that...
Could you conclude your comments? I've given you about 3.5 minutes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, in the commercial buildings, it talks about saving X number of BTUs, but it doesn't. There's no relationship to square footage. I don't know how you can have that. The taxes, who's going to pay for all those tax incentives? It's going to create more of a bureaucracy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and Chair Gilliam. My name is Fred Yates. I'm from Linn County. I'm here in total and complete opposition to Bill HB 3535. I urge you to kill this bill at this point and do not let it proceed. It's not in the best interest of the private citizens of the state and only benefits the government, the bureaucracies it will create, and the green job movement. In just reading the summary, it's obvious the bill is an overwhelming intrusion into the lives of every property owner in the state of Oregon, commercial as well as residential. It is 10 solid pages of rule after rule, department after department, standard after standard, requirement after requirement, form after form, and will necessarily cause the government bureaucracy, already bloated and in debt, to increase in size, thereby adding even more tax burden to the already stressed taxpayers. We do not have infinitely deep pockets. It creates an entirely new department, levies fees, assesses fines, regulates real estate sales and rental properties, and imposes yearly inspections on commercial property. It takes from the private sector and gives to the government. One-size-fits-all international standards are a joke. How can you compare Northern Oregon to Southern Oregon or Western Oregon to Eastern Oregon? They have to be all unique in everywhere they go. Man-made global warming, which many of the proponents are touting, has been proven to be false. Why do we keep beating this dead horse? There's no anticipated cost in this entire thing. Yes, they tell you how much it'll cost to have this little energy audit done, but they don't talk about the cost because to have everything done. It doesn't cost about the cost of the bureaucracy. Spain has already demonstrated green jobs do not sustain an economy. I ask that you please read my one-page short written testimony that highlights only 4 egregious points out of possibly 50 or more. I thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Great. Thank you all. We'll hear next from Alana Gwinney, Terry Miller, and Kelly Diemer.
Chairs and member of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 3535. My name is Terry Miller, and I'm a program director with Conservation Services Group, or CSG. CSG is a 26-year-old mission-driven nonprofit organization that provides design, development, and implementation of energy efficiency and renewable energy services, with particular emphasis on residential retrofit. CSG is headquartered in Westboro, Massachusetts, and maintains its second largest office in Portland, Oregon. Our Portland office includes over 80 staff, the majority of which are focused exclusively on delivery of Energy Trust of Oregon's existing homes program. I'm here today on behalf of CSG, not Energy Trust of Oregon, and provide this background to give you context for my testimony. CSG supports House Bill 3535 because it provides a simple yet effective means to accomplish three goals that align with CSG's mission and the priorities of the state of Oregon. Number one, job creation and industry development. Our aim is to help create a profitable, sustainable industry focused on the wise use of energy, thereby contributing to build a more effective and efficient economy. Approximately every $1 million investment in energy efficiency creates about 17 family wage jobs. These include new jobs as well as existing workers who augment their service offerings to include energy efficiency. In addition to direct job creation, dissemination of energy efficiency goods and services decreases energy bills and can increase discretionary income, the spending of which helps sustain and creates jobs in other industries. Two, buildings that are safe, comfortable, durable, and affordable to operate. Ongoing advancements in building science have increased the sophistication and specificity with which we can address enhancements to meet various social, financial, and environmental priorities in our buildings. But none of this matters if consumers are not aware of or motivated to implement energy efficiency. What matters to them is that the building is safe, comfortable, durable, and affordable to operate. An appropriately designed energy performance score helps to create awareness of energy efficiency and provides a baseline against which consumers can compare two or more buildings and make an informed decision. EPS can thus help to engage a greater volume of consumers in evaluating and participating in opportunities unique to their building, which can ultimately manifest in increased safety, comfort, durability, and operational affordability. Third and last, environmental protection. We hold that there can indeed be a positive relationship between the environment and the economy, and that energy efficiency brings this concept into practice. Every insulation job, every updated HVAC system, every efficient light bulb reduces the demand for power, simultaneously avoiding environmental impacts of the construction and operation of our power supply resources. Energy efficiency is cheaper than power supply development, operation, and maintenance, and when we appreciate avoided environmental impact, the value of energy efficiency only increases. An energy performance score and label that is simply designed in a way that is understandable to Oregonians can help scale up the volume of consumers aware of and engaged in energy efficiency. Most people recognize the federal government's Energy Guide and Energy Star labels for appliances, homes, and other items. These simple approaches speak to consumers and have helped to transform the market to where most consumers recognize the label and can participate.
Good wrap up here.
You got it. The question doesn't seem to be about whether buildings will be required to receive energy performance labels, but really the question is about whether or not Oregon is going to take a leadership position and add performance labeling to the quiver of mutually reinforcing efforts to bolster the energy efficiency of our building stock. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for your testimony. Clark, subbing, I think, for...
I'm subbing for Kelly Beamer.
Great.
My name is Clark Brockman, and I live in Portland, Oregon. And I'd like to thank the committee chairs and the co-chairs and the committee at large for hearing my testimony today. I'm an associate principal at Sarah Architects, an 85-person, employee-owned firm in Portland that specializes in architecture, interior design, planning, and sustainability. Our brand is distinctly tied to high-performance workspaces, buildings, districts, and communities, and has been proven to be strong through the recent recession. Our firm was approximately 85 people 3 years ago, and it is the same today. Very few architecture firms in Oregon can say this. And I'm confident that our strength and the jobs that we preserved comes directly from our focus on healthy, high-performance, energy-efficient buildings and communities. We are actively hiring right now. Sustainability has been and still is a job creator at Sarah Architects, and that's tied directly to our focus on energy efficiency. I'm here to speak in strong support for HB 3535 and its vision for Oregon implementing a building energy performance score. I believe this is one of the most important job-creating policies that the legislature can put forth this session. And as I'm sure you know, energy efficiency is already a cornerstone of the Northwest Power Planning Council's 6th Northwest Power Plan, making energy efficiency a cornerstone of public energy policy. The energy performance score is a cornerstone for energy efficiency. We need to know the real energy performance of the buildings we inhabit, both residential and commercial. The real estate markets in the state will need this information in order to assign value to energy efficiency, which is currently absent in real estate calculus. As building owners and users become more knowledgeable about the actual performance of their buildings, they will make better and informed decisions about how they should invest going forward. There's an extraordinary amount of latent energy to be acquired by making our buildings more efficient. The latent energy has been referred to as megawatts by Amory Lovins of the Rocky Mountain Institute. And megawatts are effectively the basis for the 6th Northwest Power Plant. Oregon enjoys a prominent role as a national and world leader in high-performance, low-energy buildings. Much of this reputation exists because of the Oregon's progressive public and energy policies to date. The energy performance score is the next step. I can personally guarantee you that our firm obtains work around the country and around the world now based on the quality of Oregon's reputation as a leader in this arena. The EPS will open up a now nascent market in existing building energy efficiency, both at the residential and commercial scales. Our firm directly benefits as well. We've won 3 projects in the last 6 months tied directly to existing building efficiency with zero marketing. The work is simply coming in the door. And yet that is just a nascent ad hoc system. If we started to create a system like an energy performance score, it would build it. Homeowners and owners of commercial and industrial buildings who invest in high performance will see savings in energy bills and be buffered against future increases in rates. People who live and work in high performance buildings will also have better air quality and thus better health and experience less noise and more comfort when indoors. So with that, I just want to strongly encourage you to do this. I believe this is the future of where buildings are going to go. We're actually not going to be building very many new buildings, but existing buildings is where the investment should be placed. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Chair Cannon, Co-Chair Gilliam, and members of the committee. My name is Ilana Guinea. I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. And before I start, I will let you know that I just spoke to John Mollis, who was supposed to testify earlier. He apologizes that he had a conflict and had to run and wasn't able to be here. He is going to be submitting written testimony to you all by Monday. Somebody mentioned earlier when they were up here that people respond better to carrots than sticks, and I thought that was surprising to say about this bill because we really do see this bill as a carrot. It is a carrot for consumers that will encourage them to take steps that will not only improve our energy use, our energy efficiency, and our environment, but also create jobs, which we're desperately in need of right now across Oregon, especially in the construction industry, at a very, very minimal cost. And I really think that anything where we can claim those three pieces is a great step forward for this state. This bill will encourage job creation. I don't think that there's any disputing that. And it will encourage job creation in one of the sectors of our economy that has been hit the worst by the recession and that is recovering the most slowly. There's still over 20%, close to 30% unemployment in many sectors of, or in many areas of the building trades. It will create job creation. It will create jobs across the state. Very few proposals that we're looking at can claim to help all of Oregon, and this bill really can help our economy and create jobs across our state. It's exactly what we need right now. I don't want to take too much time. I know we're running behind, but I would encourage all of you to support this bill and to support any legislation that comes before you that can claim that three-pronged win of helping our environment, creating jobs when we most desperately need it, and coming at very little cost. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I just want to confirm, Mr. Brockman, that under this bill, an energy performance score for residential and small rental spaces would be valid for 10 years. Is that also your understanding?
I am not sure on that detail, but there are people. Yes. Yes, I am.
Take that as confirmation.
I'm now confident.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we will find your excuse. Thank you very much. Representative Johnson, do you need to testify now on the other bill? Be happy to open up that hearing for you to testify.
If you do that, that'd be fine.
Okay.
I'm going to put it down all to get to in
quarter at 6. Okay, great. Then that's what we'll do. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2992 for the purpose of allowing Representative Johnson to present his testimony. So those of you... We will spend another 15 minutes or so on the first bill. We have a shorter list, mercifully, for 2992.
Mr. Chair, thank you, members of the committee, and Mr. Co-Chair. I am at the risk of being guilty of plagiarizing. I'll greet you with the same lines, that same quotation that Representative Gilliam used when he appeared before our business committee last week. He said, "This is my favorite committee in the entire House," in his self-affable style. So thank you very much for hearing me.
Did you believe him then?
You know, he's former Boy Scout. Was that not correct?
Am I being talked about?
Flattering terms. For the record, thank you. I am Mark Johnson, representative from House District 52, which is all of Hood River County, part of Clackamas County, and the most beautiful part of the Columbia River Gorge in Multnomah County. So thank you very much. House Bill 2992 is actually a bill that was written by Representative Richardson. It's a bill that I think addresses an issue that I think needs to have some exposure in the debate as we go forward as a state. He and I talked about this during the interim about the issue, and he wrote the bill, but because of his responsibilities and the time constraints he has with the Ways and Means process, he asked me if I would be willing to carry the bill for him at this level, and I said I'd be happy to do that. But basically, the bill, my interest in this comes to today as a result of being on the campaign trail. Last fall, as a candidate, knocking on doors and asking people what they thought about Oregon and how happy were they with the current state of affairs in their state, as you can imagine, you get a lot of opinions. But one of them that continued to shine through long and loud and very clearly to me was that people just continue to be frustrated with the course of Oregon. And what I mean by that is it seems that many times we go out of our way to make things more difficult for us than they ought to be or that they need to be. And in regards to House Bill 2992, what it does is it addresses the Oregon's renewable energy portfolio, which has been in law for a few years now. But the one glaring omission in that portfolio is what I believe to be, and what I think a majority of Oregonians believe to be, the most renewable resource we have, which would be hydropower that comes from our Columbia River system. That's an area that obviously goes right through my House District 52 in Hood River. It's a system that has for generations now produced inexpensive, clean, green energy. But for whatever reason, it's not a part of our renewable energy portfolio. So my whole intent in coming before you today, and I appreciate the courtesy hearing on this bill, I appreciate your attention to this, is just to raise the awareness that I think the majority of Oregonians really would like to have Oregon solutions to the long-term future of this state. And we are a state blessed with abundant natural resources, from timber to water. And if we can use that renewable resource, which again is green and virtually carbon-free, to produce the energy that we know we're going to need to grow and to prosper and to create jobs and to continue the ability of this state to expand and to be a job-creating area that continues to fill the needs of our residents. We need to provide solutions that are Oregon-based solutions, and I think that amending the Oregon renewable energy portfolio, as House Bill 2992 would do that. It just puts in two words. It just says hydroelectric power. It makes it one of the arrows in the quiver, if you will, of what we can use as a state as we try to meet the demands, not just for today, but for the future. So what I'd like to do, I think you may have in front of you, I don't know if the clerk was able to get this out, but there was a letter submitted on behalf of from a constituent by the name of Marcy Putman. Do you have that?
I think so.
I'm just going to read this into the record, because as I was sitting in my office this morning saying, what was I going to say in front of the committee, I think that Ms. Putnam, who is a representative of IBEW, the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, really, I think, states the case very, very clearly. So I'll just read this into the record, and then I'll get away, and you guys have some other folks.
Representative Jones, are you planning on reading the whole letter?
Could I just read a few paragraphs from it?
Why don't you choose a couple of pieces of it? We have it. We'll make sure it's
okay
in the committee's records.
Let me just say this. On the surface, Oregon's existing renewable portfolio standard seems reasonable, but the restrictive nature of the RPS does not account for the most basic renewable source, hydroelectricity. By excluding hydro generation, the RPS becomes a non-exclusive plan that serves to create additional markets, solar, wind, etc., and eliminates the state's flagship energy source. Oregon has put itself on the path to eliminate its only coal-fired generation, and new wind projects are being considered to serve outside of the state. Oregon needs its hydroelectricity to meet its own demand, and that generation should be included in the RPS. Our members are not against environmental policies that help protect Oregon's air, land, and rivers. However, we cannot support policies which will be detrimental to meeting energy needs and revamping Oregon's economy while citizens, governments, and businesses attempt to recover from the recession. So I thank you for that, but I really think as a constituent, I think she states the case that I think really most Oregonians believe in. They want practical solutions to the long-term energy needs of the state, and I think hydropower should be a key component of that. So with that, I will close my testimony to begin with and allow you to continue with your hearing, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. So any quick questions? Representative Witt? Yeah, you don't get off quite so easy. Representative Witt.
Just a comment that we probably need to wait until redistricting before Marcy Putnam is a constituent of Representative Johnson's.
Right.
She's actually my neighbor.
In that, I meant she represents constituents with the electrical workers, exactly. Thank you, Rep. Witt.
Thank you. With that, I will temporarily close the public hearing. Representative Boone?
Yes, and I would be remiss if I didn't, you know, do what my friend from
you
a colleague.
Johnson?
No, Johnson doesn't need to be. From Happy Valley usually goes on a bit of a rant. But my rant is smaller and more concise, and it's that we do what our neighbors north in D.C. do and count for hydro for our RPS. They have gone from about under 90% to 98%+ since they've done that, and they're continuing to be innovative and making their slow plod, fast plod toward 100% renewable. So I know I'm not going to change everybody's minds, but it is possible, and they're doing it, and they're doing it in an environmentally friendly way, and their energy costs are less because of that. So.
I appreciate that. I'll be very interested when we get back to testimony on this to hear what folks would think of including all existing hydro within the RPS and increasing that target from 25% to the 98 or 100% that you're suggesting BC has been able to get to. I think that's one avenue worth exploring. And also look forward to hearing how hydroelectric power does qualify for the RPS, because some of it does. With that, we will close for now House Bill 2992 public hearing and reopen continue the public hearing on House Bill 3535. We will spend committee about another 15 minutes. We will, if that does not allow everybody who has signed up on the four pages of testimony to testify, we will carry remainder of the public hearing over to Tuesday. I'm going to avoid so as I attempt to prioritize here, I'm going to try to make sure that we hear from people who are not regularly in the building. So those of you who we see frequently, we may hear from you on Tuesday instead if we're not able to complete our way through these sheets. So I appreciate your patience. We will hear next from Sarah Walker. We haven't already, yes. Kyle Chase and David Roth. Go ahead.
Hi, members of the committee and co-chairs. My name is Sarah Walker. I formerly worked in the construction industry until I was laid off. And the state of Oregon decided that I was worth retraining as an energy auditor. And so WorkSource paid for me to do this energy auditing training. And it turned out to be something I'm really good at and I like. And it would be a really good career for me. Since I took the course 9 months ago, I'm still looking for work. And so, you know, there are a lot of people out there looking for jobs just like I am. And a lot of them have, you know, 15 years in the industry, in the construction industry or whatever. And so for a lot of people who are new to the industry or new, just graduated from college, they are in the same position that I am. And so this bill would be really helpful to all of us to, you know, give us some opportunities. I also think that as a consumer, if you put the burden of the audit on the home buyer, they may choose to get an audit and to have that information for themselves in order to make an informed decision. But when you do that, you're not sharing the information. So if I go and have an audit done on a house I'm considering buying, it doesn't help anyone else. It's only helping myself. And so that $400 or whatever that I would pay would just be used once and never again. But if that audit is done before the house is put up for sale, then that information can be potentially helpful to dozens or hundreds of people that are trying to make an informed decision about the kind of house that they want to buy. Because $400 over the lifetime of a house is nothing, really. I mean, it's a very small upfront cost. Anyway, I will stop there and let other people who can explain more about how energy audits work, I will let them speak.
Thank you very
Thank
much
you for the opportunity.
Thanks for your testimony. Yes, sir.
Greetings, representatives. It's nice to have this opportunity. Thank you. My name is Kyle Chase. I've worked in the energy efficiency field for probably about 6.5 years now. I started out as an insulator and then eventually transitioned into doing energy audits themselves and selling the work. And I'll tell you, the biggest challenge that folks who work in this field face is education and educating consumers on, you know, the benefits of doing this sort of work. And this would be an amazing tool to, you know, inform consumers of what they're dealing with when they're buying a new home. I mean, that was a very that's like one of our biggest complaints, especially like in September or in the beginning of summer when that first heating or cooling bill shows up is, you know, I didn't anticipate this. We have to do something. And this would certainly help inform them of that. I've been doing training, you know, since then, and we have educated quite a few people, you know, talented folks like Sarah here who are ready, able, and willing to do this work. There are excellent standards in place out there as far as, like, the quality of the tool and, you know, how accurate it is. And it certainly, you know, shifts from climate to climate. So what it goes for Bend does not necessarily go for Portland. I mean, it's versatile and it can, you know, give accurate information depending on where you're at. You know, and as far as paying for it, homeowners will either pay for it upfront, or they'll pay for it in the long term if they purchase a home that isn't efficient and has issues and they wind up paying for it for the 30 years that they own it rather than being able to have that information upfront and making a decision based on that. So there will be some problems with implementation that need to be tackled, but in the long run, I think this bill will benefit consumers. And certainly create jobs and help our economy. So I fully support this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your testimony. Mr. Roth.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. David Roth from Portland, representing Tax Fairness Oregon. I want to express a qualified support for House Bill 3535. You've already heard plenty of praise, legitimate praise, concerning the merits of the idea of spreading the word in a market-oriented way concerning the value of each particular structure from a standpoint of energy efficiency. What I'd like to emphasize are concerns about questions of fiscal impact for this the initial proposal and administration. I don't want to go into those things. I understand that changes are already being made by the authors that are quite significant on both respects. I'll just emphasize that we really, Tax Fairness Oregon, really would be concerned that if energy conservation subsidies became as excessive as alternative energy subsidies became in the last decade, that's something obviously we want to stay away from, and I'm sure most of you think the same way. Let me finish by saying that if the current financial difficulties of the state and the state government and municipalities, counties, impair the feasibility of this overall plan, we recommend that that the committee try to pare it down to its essentials. And I think that would really be to have mandatory energy scale score that was required whenever a building was put up for sale.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roth. Are there questions, Representative Bailey?
I just wanted to note for the record, Mr. Chair, that we've had now testimony from folks who are looking for work as well as testimony earlier of folks who are apparently hiring, so Marshall meets Sarah, Marshall, you guys can get together after the hearing. So.
That would be one productive outcome regardless of where we go with this bill. Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm sure you'll understand the challenges that we face here with a number of folks still remaining to testify on this bill, including people who are not regularly in the building. I'm going to ask them to come up next in a panel of four. Keep your comments very brief. It may be the last panel that we're able to hear from today on this bill. We do have a page of folks who are here on 2992. So, Stuart Leibowitz, Alyssa Kane, or Eliza, James Phelps, and Kirsten Isaacson. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Stuart Leibowitz. I'm from Roseburg, Oregon. And I would like to support House Bill 3535, and I'd like to speak from a low-income perspective for the last 22 years. I've worked for nonprofits whose primary goal is to help the poor. And I will tell you that most of the people that we work with are renters. And it is absolutely heartbreaking to see people walk through our doors with utility bills, $150 to $200, and faced with the ugly choice of keeping their heat going or paying their rent and facing the scourge of homelessness. This bill will provide an incentive for landlords and investors to upgrade their rentals. It will also give renters the knowledge to make informed choices to keep their costs down. I think this bill will do wonders for helping low-income renters stay in their homes. I will also add that the nonprofits that I have worked for run weatherization programs in Douglas, Josephine County, and I see the jobs that are created as a result of this. And I see the fact that low-income people are trained for this, so not only will this benefit job creation, but job creation for those who need it most. And so I strongly urge you to support House Bill 3535.
Thank you for your remarks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elisa Kane. I'm the Green Building Manager with the City of Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 3535. I have submitted written comments, but just want to underscore one or two key points here. The City of Portland strongly supports the bill's performance scores and disclosure requirements. The City of Portland has identified benefits, many of which you've heard today, of requiring disclosing building energy performance. It helps prospective buyers and renters make informed decisions. It allows for a market-based response to improving energy efficiency. It is the first step in improving building performance, and it allows the state and local governments to track progress on our ambitious climate goals. On the commercial side, we've heard that five other cities and two other states have already passed this. On the residential side, just to confirm, three counties and cities have already passed energy performance scores disclosures, and as well as six states. I hope that we can join them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairs and Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Kirsten Isaacson. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon and Southern Idaho District Council of Laborers. We have 4,000 members in the state of Oregon, and a growing number of them, I hope, will be weatherizing and doing energy efficiency upgrade of people's homes. And just to introduce you to one of them, unfortunately, she's under a house right now, but the type of jobs that we're creating, one of the women who we have help train and enter this industry was a single mother on welfare before this, now has a steady job, employment, and we hope to keep her continuing to install insulation in attics and underneath people's homes, eventually climb the career ladder to be an auditor. And we really think that HB 3535 provides a mechanism to help her and many others. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, why don't you, one of you, sub out since I called up a fourth. Mr. Phelps.
Good afternoon,
chairs and members. Thank you very much. Jim Phelps from Corvallis, Oregon. I'm a physician, and I work for Good Samaritan Hospital. I'm here to provide a physician's point of view on this bill. And I'm also a member of the Energy Action Team of the Corvallis Sustainability Coalition. I speak only for myself. I'm here to tell you about the healthcare aspects of this bill and the way in which this has to do with medical care, and finally a little bit more about caulk guns, just summarizing my written testimony. It's a healthcare bill because my clients, when their costs go up, they get sicker. And it's a medical care bill because when I order a laboratory test, I would not know what to do with the results unless I had some scaled norms by which to interpret them. So when I get a blood count, I need to know, well, what kind of client had this? So when people get a performance score, they will know on a scaled, standardized means, what does this actually mean to them? Whereas a utility bill, who knows who is in the house before them? And we actually have heard from our Energy Action Team members that it is not possible to get that information from utility bills. They have in public testimony indicated they will not make that available. And finally, more about caulk guns. It only works if you point it at the missing place, right? So landlords' incentives do not include reasons to go out and pay for that caulk gun to be applied. And in my written testimony, I've given you some examples about really egregious cases in Corvallis that we've discovered through our canvassing in neighborhoods. People are really struggling to keep their places warm because the caulk gun has not been applied. I know you've been working very hard on this, and you've heard a great deal. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. So are there any questions? There are not. So with apologies, we will carry over the rest of this hearing. We heard from 25 people in just over an hour. Believe it or not, folks, this is a deliberative process, even though it doesn't always seem like it when you're coming up to give two or three minutes of testimony. There will be continued discussions about this. We urge you to come back on Tuesday to participate in those. We're going to carry over the remainder of the public hearing on House Bill 3535 and return to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2992. So closing one and reopening 2992. I'm going to invite Todd Wynn, Ted Case, and Fred Yates to return. And just so folks understand, we have about 10 people signed up for this bill, so we'll try to keep roughly on the pace that we moved to the last, and we may be able to finish it off for today.
Members of the committee, co-chairs, my name is Todd Wynn. I am Vice President of Cascade Policy Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit public policy research organization located in Portland, Oregon. Our mission is to promote policies that enhance individual liberty, personal responsibility, and economic opportunity in the state. I'll be quick as I've provided my written testimony for the committee members today, but I am here to testify in support of House Bill 2992. There are just two points I'd like to make, the first one being excluding hydroelectricity from the renewable portfolio standard will impose significant economic costs on Oregon. Currently, about 1 in 30 Oregonians had their electricity cut off due to inability to pay last year. 1 in 4 were past due on their accounts, and the numbers on the low-income assistance program have increased significantly in the past few years. The renewable energy mandates specifically excluded the vast majority of Oregon's hydroelectricity from being considered renewable. This means that the renewable portfolio standards will have to be met by more expensive and less reliable forms of energy generation, such as wind. Cascade Policy Institute's recently released economic analysis shows that the renewable portfolio standards, with the exclusion of hydroelectricity, will cause significant economic damages upon Oregonians. Over the period of 2015 to 2025, the mandate will cost Oregonians an additional $6.8 billion more over conventional power. In 2025, the mandates will cost Oregon families an additional $250 a year, commercial businesses $1,400 a year, and industrial businesses $11,500 more per year. By 2025, because of these increased electricity costs, the Oregon economy will lose an average of 17,500 jobs. The second point I'd like to make is Oregon is one of the nation's leaders in clean energy, and this needs to be recognized. Oregon is ranked 48th out of 50 states in carbon intensity and nitrogen oxide intensity, meaning the amount of emissions per unit of electricity created, and 46th out of 50 states in the amount of sulfur dioxide per unit of electricity created. This is mainly due to our high use of clean hydroelectricity. Counting hydroelectricity as renewable energy, Oregon already generates over 65% of its electricity from renewable resources and is third in the nation, according to the federal government. In contrast, for the nation as a whole, renewable resources supply approximately 8% of the total electric power generation. It is best to establish a realistic definition of renewable energy, finally acknowledge our clean energy advantages in the Pacific Northwest, and begin reforming a forceful and unrealistic push for expensive renewable energy sources that will have a significant negative impact on Oregon families. So I urge you to support House Bill 2992. Thank you for your time.
And have you submitted written testimony?
I did.
Was that passed out? Okay. Thank you. Mr. Case?
Co-Chair Cannon, Co-Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Case. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Institute. OREC represents 18 electric utilities in Oregon, serving 200,000 members with 30,000 miles of line. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on HB 2992 to remove all restrictions on the use of hydropower. First, 4 years after the passage of the bill, we still owe a debt of gratitude for many members of this committee who helped with the small utility provisions of this bill that help small utilities like West Oregon Electric Cooperative make the transition to the RPS. Certainly appreciate all your help on that. To prepare for the compliance, Oregon's electric co-ops have been working on a variety of renewable resources, wave energy, geothermal energy, and we have an existing landfill gas plant outside of Corvallis. However, our main source of electricity continues to be the Bonneville Power Administration marketing from the Columbia and Snake River dams, approximately 90%. We have one of the lowest carbon footprints in the nation because of our hydropower, and the dams have helped smooth the way for thousands of megawatts of wind power to be brought into the Northwest electricity grid. I realize that the introduction of HB 2992 is making a bold statement, but I think it's an important one. There are other states with RPS standards that allow large hydropower to be part of qualifying renewable resources. And at the national level, the RPS legislation that has been debated for the last several years allowed federal hydropower to be backed out of the base amount that you have to comply. While that legislation has not passed, it's at least some recognition on the federal level, at least, of the benefits of hydropower as a renewable resource. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Cannon and Gillian. My name is Fred Yates. I'm from Linn County. I'm here to support House Bill 2992. I'm in total and complete agreement with the intent and purpose of it. Probably one of the best definitions of renewable energy is found on www.science.org, and it's simply stated, used to describe energy sources that are replenished by natural processes on a sufficiently rapid time scale so that they can be used by humans more or less indefinitely, provided the quantity taken per unit of time is not too great. Bonneville Dam exceeds that definition, and it has additional capacity sitting here waiting for us. It's totally renewable. We don't have to touch anything. It comes from the ocean. It goes into the rain, goes back out to the ocean. It's a big recycling system. It's wonderful. Whereas solar power works only when the sun's up, and wind power works only when the wind is blowing. So you got to have enough pressure differential for that to happen. This is constant. It's here. It's all the time. It's never gone. Okay. My sincere thank goes out to Representative Richardson in his attempt to rewrite ORS 469A.020 and 469A.025 to correct the short-sightedness of previous bills and subsequent laws. My final comment is to seek change that rights a wrong is the duty of all mankind. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? All right. Thank you for being here. We'll hear next from Jim Myron, John Audley, Kevin Lynch.
Thank you.
Thank you, chairs, co-chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Myron, and I'm here today representing Water Watch of Oregon, as well as the Native Fish Society. I just turned in some written testimony from Water Watch in opposition to this bill. In the interest of time, I won't try and go through the 2 pages of testimony, but let me just mention a couple of things. There are already provisions in the RPS process for hydro projects to become certified and qualify for the RPS. And they just need to be certified as low-impact hydro projects. If they're not low impact, then they were purposely excluded because of the adverse environmental impacts. So it seems rather odd to say that all of a sudden all hydro projects, even if they have unacceptable environmental impacts, should all of a sudden be able to market their power as green power. So we just don't support that concept. So anyway, I'll just close with that and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Audley.
Thank you, co-chairs, representatives. My name is John Audley, and I'm the deputy director of the Renewable Northwest Project. For more than 17 years, RNP has been advocating the responsible development of renewable energy, focusing our work in Montana, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. I stand today in opposition to House Bill 2992. And urge you not to move it. Allow me to give you a snapshot of what Oregon's RPS, as written, has helped to bring to the state. In an effort to meet Oregon, California, and Washington renewable portfolio standards, Oregon's natural resource-dependent communities now enjoy investments in the neighborhood of $5 billion. We estimate $5.4 billion investments throughout the state. So for about slightly over $500 million, we've realized a return nearly 12 times what the state has invested. Oregon is now home to the world's largest renewable companies, including Solar World, Vestas, and Iberdrola Renewables. These folks have brought more than 2,000 jobs to the state, and the number continues to grow. A critical issue for natural resource-dependent communities where jobs and investments are extremely scarce. Sherman County, Oregon now enjoys annual tax revenue in the neighborhood of $10 million. These dollars translate into good schools, emergency equipment, and health care programs. To share the benefits of wind energy beyond those property owners with sufficient wind resources, they've created a program that presently gives each family a check for about $600. Oregon is now home to the largest concentration of renewable energy technical training schools, enabling electricians, trade unionists, and other folks to find good-paying jobs. In fact, OIT reports every graduate of its program has found a job within their field within 6 months of graduating. Oregon's RPS recognizes hydropower as a renewable resource. Hydropower provides folks all along the West Coast with good, clean, and expensive energy. The state's RPS was designed to diversify our portfolio of renewable energy resources to include other technologies, enabling a wider group of Oregonians the opportunity to directly benefit from our bountiful renewable resource potential. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Lynch. I work for Iberdrola Renewables, a developer of wind, biomass, and solar power, headquartered here in Portland, Oregon. I'm speaking in opposition to the legislation as well. I just would want to observe that irrespective of whether Oregon has a renewable energy standard, the preponderance, the overwhelming majority of hydroelectric generation that currently exists is going to continue to be generating electricity and providing low-cost electricity to consumers in Oregon and elsewhere for a long time to come. That's because hydroelectricity generally is relatively low-cost, long-term investments are made, and if a project is economically and environmentally viable, it'll get relicensed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission or the Bonneville Power Administration and the Corps of Engineers will continue to operate and market it. What the RPS legislation is really about, and if you look at the purposes of the legislation, the whereas clauses in 2007, is about building the future electric portfolio. It's not about it, and so hydroelectricity is not going to be displaced by renewable energy. It's cheap, it's low cost. The things that are going to get displaced are the kinds of electric generation that have high fuel costs, coal and natural gas primarily. So the renewable energy standard is really about the direction that we take going forward and what kind of generation resources are going to be there, are we going to supply. As the prior two witnesses mentioned, there is an accommodation for a number of different elements of hydroelectricity existing and prospective already in the renewable energy standard, and it doesn't make sense to us at this point simply to allow existing hydroelectricity from anywhere in the western United States to count for compliance toward the Oregon Renewable Energy Standard. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? I guess coming back to a point that was raised earlier, why was the, given some of the assets that the hydroelectric power brings to the region, why was the original RPS not drafted to include those? And Kevin, I think you spoke to it to some extent, but can you amplify why?
Sure.
You know, we could talk, and I think some of us would agree that in many ways it is renewable power. So why did this? Why was it drafted the way it was?
Well, co-chairs and members of the committee, I'd submit two reasons for that, at least as I think about it. Number one is that, again, this is about future generation investments, not really about what's existing. And hydroelectricity as a low-cost, low-variable-cost electric source is not the thing that's going to be displaced as the percentage of the RPS goes higher. The second is, if you look, is really an equity issue across the Oregon utilities. Different Oregon utilities have different levels of hydroelectricity in their portfolios. So if you set a single standard for all of Oregon's electric utilities to try to meet, some will be relatively disadvantaged in trying to accomplish that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative?
Mr. Chair, I would just say briefly that I appreciate the this hearing. And I don't believe Representative Richardson in any way is trying to divide our communities here. And all I would say at this point is, to your point, and it's a good one, is no matter what we do looking forward, we better not forget what I believe to be the Northwest advantage, which is that hydroelectric system. And I don't know that anybody's saying they don't, but let's don't forget that, and we'll find ways to work together.
Representative?
Thank you. Can you comment on BC, British Columbia's use of their RPS and where it's at right now at 97%, and how that, can you make the case for not including hydro here? Old hydro, put it that way.
Well, sure. Co-chairs and Representative Boone, I'm more familiar with New York's RPS than British Columbia's. New York has a renewable energy standard somewhere set already in the mid to upper 20% range. They have this thing called Niagara Falls in New York, and the New York Power Authority has a substantial hydroelectric resource on the Niagara River. So they have already a single large baseline off of which to work, and that is the predominant electricity supplier in the state of New York. It's a very different model, the RPS law in New York from Oregon's. And so the equity issue across utilities is less significant. So what they did in New York was they set a baseline, a very aggressive set of targets for RPS in New York, but the baseline started at a higher number. So, you know, 25% RPS when you're starting at 20 is a little different from a 15% standard when you're starting at 4.
Thank you. We'll bring up the next panel. We will hear from... is Danelle remain? Yes, there you are. Okay. Danelle, Stuart Leibowitz, and Tom Wolf.
Okay, co-chairs,
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Danelle Romaine, representing the Oregon PUD Association. Just a quick plug for the Federal Columbia River Power System, which provides a mix of clean, renewable energy sources, particularly hydropower and wind energy. In addition, PUDs have developed renewable energy, including cogeneration, wood waste, biomass, agricultural waste, landfill gas, and fish-friendly hydropower projects, which I think many of you are aware of. We have an extremely low carbon footprint due to hydropower being our primary source of electricity, and it's essential that utilities be given credit under the RPS for early actions they've taken to implement carbon and other greenhouse gas reduction activities. So that's the end of my comments.
That's very brief. All right. Go ahead.
My name is Stuart Lieberwitz. I'm from Roseburg, and I'm with a group called the Douglas County Global Warming Coalition. And I would like to preface my remarks by saying that we are coming off the warmest decade in recorded temperature history. And this legislative body, when it passed this bill a couple of years ago, had the vision and understanding that it was essential to promote renewable energy that would address this climate crisis. And it also understood that we needed to establish basically a new frontier, that in order for us to address global warming, we need to spur investment and the use of new technologies, new renewable energies, in order for us to be part of the solution. And every community, every state, every nation must do its share. I'm proud that Oregon took that step. I speak in opposition to this bill because to count the existing hydro would dilute that effort. I urge you strongly to maintain the vision that was so profoundly expressed in the original bill and to continue to promote the renewables so we can address this climate crisis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chairs Cannon, Gilliam, committee members. My name is Tom Wolf. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, representing the 2,800 members of TU found here in the state. I'm here to voice Trout Unlimited's strong opposition to House Bill 2992. Following what Water Watch is, I'm not going to repeat what they said, and we strongly support Water Watch's comment, and I just want to focus a little bit on an issue that is the primary cause of Trout Unlimited's existence, and that's wild native trout and salmon. Healthy rivers with healthy salmon runs are a big cause of the economic support in many rural communities. Right now there's hearings going on determining whether there'll be gill nets or not in the Columbia River. Millions and millions of dollars are at stake there in that discussion, no matter what side you're on. Hydropower has been identified as what's called the four H's of salmon recovery, the negative four H's of salmon recovery: hydro, habitat, harvest, and hatchery. Hydro or any dam that exists can have a major cause of damage on salmon recovery. And it has been stated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife and other people that I know that the biggest cause of demise of the Columbia River runs, which were once up to 20 million fish and now down around 2 million salmon, are the building of the hydro dams. So I think that what has currently been done in the renewable portfolio done in 2007 was a fair process that gave us the ability to deal with the hydro products that we already have to make them more efficient instead of allowing more to be built. Currently, Trout Unlimited has been supporting many bills in this session with to deal with the health of our rivers and our native fish policy populations. They're ones of keeping large woody debris in streams, dealing with invasive species to increase ODFW's ability to handle aquatic invasive species, quality rivers, many things like that. It is, and our members currently are involved in many things here in Salem and across the state on restoration projects where we are working hard to restore wild salmon and trout populations. Our members have a large commitment to it. That's why they join the organization. They spend thousands of hours every year working on these issues. And I think that we believe that HB 2992 would harm that mission, and we ask the members of your committee to oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Danelle, I think this question is for you. We don't have anybody from BPA here. You may know the answer. I don't, and that is how much variation there is on a year-to-year basis in the production of the hydroelectric, the Columbia River hydroelectric system. Because if we're going to, you know, if this approach was to go to a standard that included hydroelectric, we'd have to understand the variation on an annual basis based on, you know, river flows, et cetera. I wonder how much variation there is. Do you have any sense of that?
Chair Cannon, I don't, and there might be somebody in the room who could answer, but I'm definitely not the one.
Okay. Well, we might get an answer to that question. I recall it coming up in our discussions of Senate Bill 838, and one of the challenges associated with pegging a standard to a hydro, including the Bonneville system within hydro, or within the definition of the RPS, was, because we discussed this at length, colleagues. I mean, I was on the committee in 2007 when we did this bill. We had 85 amendments on this bill, and there was just discussion ad nauseum of this particular point, and there are significant technical challenges associated with the policy that's proposed here to include hydroelectric within the definition of renewable. So apart from your feelings about whether or not it's renewable or how what should our feelings be about old dams, there are technical issues associated with it that have at least something to do with the decisions that committee made in 2007. Maybe we'll hear from it's just Mr. O'Connor now, which might be a good source. Any other questions for this panel or comments?
Well, since you brought it up, thank you, Mr. Chair, the RPS in the year that we did that, 2007. Who can tell me why that date was chosen?
We can put that to Mr. O'Connor, who only grudgingly, I think, is here testifying in the first place. I don't know if any of you have a notion of the date on the hydro before or after 1995. But we'll invite Mr. O'Connor up, and if there's anybody else who wants to join this discussion, thank you for your testimony.
Thanks.
Co-Chair Cannon, Co-Chair Gilliam, for the record, Tom O'Connor representing Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association. I probably wasn't going to say anything, but then when I saw that John Otley and Kevin Lynch and the Wind guys were going to talk, I figured maybe I'd better come up for just a second. Obviously, we believe that hydropower is a renewable resource. It's, in fact, the original renewable resource, single most important resource for producing electricity in the Northwest, both in terms of its own inherent ability to generate electricity and in terms of its flexibility as a backup or, that's probably the wrong term, as a balancing and integrating mechanism for variable renewable resources like wind and solar. In terms of the RPS itself, Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association supported and advocated for Senate Bill 838 in 2007, we stand by that commitment. The RPS, in fact, does consider hydroelectricity a renewable resource. That's stated in the statute. The question, of course, is what kinds of hydropower qualify under the RPS for compliance purposes. New hydro is a qualifying resource if it's located outside the protected areas as defined by the Northwest Power Planning Council. New low-impact hydro is a qualifying resource regardless whether it's outside or inside protected areas. Importantly, efficiency upgrades to existing hydro. So if you replace an old turbine, put in a new turbine, that efficiency upgrade is a qualifying resource, may be used for compliance purposes. Important in terms of the discussion about displacement, Mr. Lynch was talking about the fact that hydro could not be displaced by the standards. One of the reasons is that we worked with you all, and there are specific provisions in the contract in the RPS that say that existing BPA hydro contracts that we have are protected. A utility may reduce its RPS obligation if the target would otherwise force displacement of the lowest cost BPA hydropower. That's specifically in the statute. There's also language in the statute dealing with displacement of existing hydro resources, non-BPA. Again, if a utility may reduce its RPS obligation if the target would otherwise force displacement of existing non-fossil fuel electricity like hydro, and that's a very important provision for Eugene Water and Electric Board and some other folks who have long-term hydro. I know that it's late, so I just that in terms of the discussion, I guess I just like to three points that I guess that I think we ought to think about. And these aren't necessarily, don't have to be legislative related, but I think we need to deal with them down the line. One is that we're right in the middle of developing a workable verification and tracking system of renewable energy certificates for the hydro efficiency upgrades. Those hydro efficiency upgrades to the existing system. Those are allowed in the statute. We're developing the renewable energy certificate system, verification system to do that. That's very important. Two, we need to develop a way to deal with renewable energy certificates and tax credits where we have what we're finding now more and more in the Northwest, what we call high water, high wind, where we have periods of high hydro, high water conditions and high wind conditions. And unfortunately, the existing REC system and the existing tax credit system doesn't work very well for either those of us in the hydro community or the wind folks. And we need to find a way to do that. It may not need legislation. We may be able to work it out another way, but that's an issue that we got to figure out. And finally, I think at least from our perspective, we think we need to do a little more work to see if we can develop a consensus around how we deal with capacity upgrades to existing hydro systems. So if you've got an existing impoundment and it has no turbine in it at the moment, but you put a new turbine in, that's a new investment, makes sense. It's cost effective. Can we find a way to make sure that qualifies for compliance purposes under the RPS going forward? That's in the long run. So those are some things that I guess I think that we ought to be looking at kind of going forward.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Any questions? I appreciate you being here. I was disappointed to see that the IOUs, which of course have the largest obligation under the Renewable Portfolio Standard, are not here to testify, but we can ask them about their thoughts on this bill later. Appreciate your comments. That is everyone who has signed up. Anybody else? Well, any further testimony?
Mr. Chair, thank you again for this hearing. And just speaking theoretically now, it's just, I think you would agree that it's possible for freshman mistakes to be overcome with experience and leadership. Okay, I'm done.
And I hope Representative Johnson learns from those.
Oh, okay, very good. Touche.
And with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2992. Thank you, committee, and I'll adjourn the committee.